WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A white supremacist pleads guilty to two charges at a federal court in Charlottesville. As new cases of COVID-19 continue to increase in Virginia, and the governor's stay-at-home and business closure orders are still in place, data from cell phones show Virginians are becoming a little restless. And we take a deep look at the disease as it continues to spread in two types of institutions in Virginia: prisons and nursing homes. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, May 1st. A white man charged with making racist online threats against a black activist in Virginia has pleaded guilty to two charges in federal court in Charlottesville. Charles Fishburne with VPM reports.
Daniel McMahon pleaded guilty to threatening and attempting to interfere with the campaign of an African-American candidate for Charlottesville City Council and for cyber-stalking. A U.S. magistrate concluded last year that he posed a danger to the community and ordered him held without bail, and a trial was set for June. The hearing was conducted via video conference because of the COVID-19 pandemic. McMahon could face a total of 6 years in jail and fines up to $350,000. His sentencing is set for July 23rd. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
There are now almost 16,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Virginia. A total of 552 people in the Commonwealth have died from the disease, according to the Virginia Department of Health. And there is an outbreak of COVID-19 at correctional centers in Buckingham County. The Virginia Department of Corrections reports 161 cases of the disease there, with more than 16% of inmates at the Dilwyn Correctional Center testing positive. As of late Thursday, 150 inmates and five staff members have tested positive at Dilwyn. That is the largest reported outbreak of any correctional facility in Virginia, according to the VDOC website. For more on COVID-19 in Virginia's prisons, Catherine Comp of VPM in Richmond spoke with reporter Whitney Evans.
Whitney, you've been digging into how COVID-19 is affecting prisons and jails. Advocates in Virginia and across the country warned early on that these would be hotspots for the coronavirus. Now the number of people who are sick inside Virginia correctional facilities is on the rise. What have you found out about the numbers?
Well, as a lot of people know, because some of these numbers are posted online, as of Wednesday, two offenders in the state system have died. About 450 offenders in state-run facilities have tested positive for COVID-19. And it's important to remember that staff have been impacted as well. 64 employees and contractors have tested positive for the virus. More than half of them work at Virginia Correctional Center for Women in Goochland. At the same time, the Virginia Department of Juvenile Justice has reported, separate from the Department of Corrections, 41 cases at its facilities, including staff, although most of the residents there have already recovered.
You also spoke to an employee at the Virginia Correctional Center for Women who spoke about some of the conditions there. And they said they were one of the employees who actually contracted coronavirus?
That's right. And we did grant them anonymity because they said they feared retaliation for speaking to the media. But they had a lot to say. When they fell ill, they were really nervous about the outcome because of their own underlying health conditions. They told me that initially their superiors told them during briefings before their shifts that they were forbidden from wearing masks or gloves because that might upset the offenders. And this employee pointed out that the only way the virus could come into these facilities is through employees who leave for the day and come back and expose themselves to inmates. The Department of Corrections says all offenders and staff are now required to wear masks that are issued to them, and they have been required to do that for some time now. The employee was also worried that alcohol-based cleaning supplies and sanitizers were still being banned inside the facility. A spokesperson for the department told me it's since modified that policy, and they're using alcohol-based sanitizers in some instances.
And what did this employee say about the ability to keep a safe distance in a prison facility?
Well, It's hard, just as everyone has been saying, including advocates and even a health official inside the Department of Corrections, with the exception of, at this specific facility, with the exception of solitary confinement, the employee told me that the cells in the rest of the facility don't have toilets or sinks inside them. So it's like a dorm setting where everyone shares the facilities. And they said, there's really no way outside of just locking the offenders down in their rooms to practice any type of social distancing.
So, Whitney, where is your reporting going next? What data hasn't been released yet that would give us a better understanding of what's happening in prisons and jails?
Well, there's still a lot to find out about jails. The Department of Corrections is updating its website every single day at 5 p.m. with any new information about how many offenders, how many employees have tested positive, how many have died, and exactly what facilities they're in. But the state so far isn't publishing any data compiled on local jails. And I've asked the Department of Health for a breakdown of how many cases there are at these facilities and which facilities they are in. I'm still waiting for that data.
Thanks so much for your reporting, Whitney.
Thank you.
That's reporter Whitney Evans talking with Catherine Comp of VPM. More than 500,000 Virginians have filed unemployment claims since the coronavirus outbreak shuttered businesses last month. According to new federal data released on Thursday, more than 74,000 Virginians filed unemployment claims last week. That is the third straight week that the totals of jobless claims have dropped. In the last 6 weeks, about 13% of Virginia's workforce has filed for jobless benefits. Governor Ralph Northam said on Wednesday that he is continuing to look at data on COVID-19 testing and other factors before deciding whether to extend the executive order closing so-called non-essential businesses past the May 8th expiration date. President Trump says he won't renew federal physical distancing guidelines that expired on Thursday. Virginia still has its own rules in place, but data from cell phones show Virginians are becoming a little restless. From partner station VPM, Ben Pavier reports.
Researchers at the University of Maryland are tracking anonymous location data from people's cell phones. They're using it to score places based on how well people are following social distancing. Professor Lei Jun is leading the study.
Virginia has been doing well in terms of social distancing.
But in the last few weeks, most state scores have slipped. On Monday, for example, about 32% of Virginians stayed home, down about 5% from 2 weeks before.
The trend is also there in Virginia, but Virginia is actually doing better than the national average.
That's especially true in Northern Virginia. The most recent data shows Arlington County has one of the highest stay-at-home rates in the country, hitting 57% on Monday. Health experts warn that any increase in travel could cause a new spike in cases.
That's Ben Pavier with VPM News reporting. Local governments across Virginia are eyeing a huge amount of money from the federal government. Governor Northam is still trying to decide how to distribute all that cash. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
The CARES Act, recently passed by Congress and signed by President Trump, includes $3.3 billion for local governments across Virginia. Fairfax County is the only jurisdiction in Virginia that'll automatically get money directly from the federal government based on its population, $200 million. Governor Ralph Northam gets to determine how to distribute the rest of it. More than $3 billion. He could distribute it based on population, or he could hand it out based on economic need in a way similar to how schools are funded. Chris Duncombe at the Commonwealth Institute says that's a tricky balancing act.
In addition to the health consequences, it's also important to take into consideration the economic consequences that are going to come from the virus. And not all local governments have the same ability to fill in for reductions in state aid.
Frank Schaffroth at George Mason University predicts the governor will end up with a funding formula that's not based solely on population, a way to send more money to places like Lee County or Petersburg, and less money to places like Alexandria and Arlington.
There are some jurisdictions, particularly in Northern Virginia, that are more than able to take care of themselves. It will be difficult, but they can do it. There are some areas that are far less able and likely to be suffering much greater economic harm.
Budget officials at local governments across Virginia are now in the process of trying to figure out how they're going to spend all that money after they figure out how much they're getting. I'm Michael Pope.
More than half of coronavirus outbreaks in Virginia are at long-term care facilities, and those outbreaks can be especially deadly. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopane has this look at why nursing home residents are vulnerable and how their families are coping.
Almost a year ago, Kitty Gray's mother moved to an assisted living facility in Richmond. Now the community is on lockdown.
She spends a lot of time watching Grey's Anatomy because we bought her an iPad during this.
And while her mother has stayed healthy so far, Gray's still worried.
You know, just that she could die in a hospital alone because you can't have visitors. That would be awful.
According to the Virginia Department of Health, more than 20% of the state's recorded deaths from COVID-19 have been residents of long-term care facilities.
The devastation is indescribable. It is awful.
Judy Wilhide Brandt was a nurse in long-term care for decades, then a state regulator. Now she advises nursing homes around the country. For the past month, she's been on the phone with facility managers who are on the front lines of a viral battle, initially without the weapons they needed, testing and PPE.
We were sitting ducks, and we knew it, and we've been screaming, and we've been going to heroic efforts to get PPE and to get testing.
Widespread testing is vital because typical nursing home staff may work in several facilities, unknowingly spreading the virus if they have it and are asymptomatic. On top of that, nursing homes are social environments.
You share your room, you get up in the morning, you go into the day room, you sit around the table with other residents, you play cards, you play bingo, you chat.
Comforting, communal, devastating when a virus sneaks in. Fortunately, things are getting better. Keith Hare with the Virginia Healthcare Association says facilities have more PPE and testing capacity has ramped up, although neither is where it needs to be yet.
This is, you know, a marathon, not a sprint. This virus is going to be with us for a long period of time.
Moving forward, experts say it will be important to remember mental health. That's a concern for Alicia Comer Wright, whose mother has schizophrenia.
It's hard because you don't really know how they're being treated, but you know all of their activities also are pretty much, you know, they've lost a lot too.
She and her children, including 6-year-old daughter Stevie, used to visit weekly.
All right, Stevie, is there anything you want to say about Grandma? Maybe not being able to see her?
That I miss her?
Yeah, I miss her too.
Connection is important. Jennifer Pryor, a gerontologist at Virginia Commonwealth University, encourages people to reach out to their family. And if they can't get in touch, to reach out to facility staff.
To say, how can you help me access my loved one? Is there something that we can do together so that I can communicate and stay connected with my loved one?
Communication has been key for Kitty Gray and her mother. They talk on the phone every night.
It's really improved our relationship, I'll say that. You know, I've always loved her, but like, I love talking to her every day.
This week, Gray and her siblings hosted a pizza party outside her mom's window. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopane.
An experimental drug to fight the new coronavirus is showing some promise in tests at the University of Virginia. The National Institutes of Health says the antiviral drug remdesivir, tested against COVID-19 at UVA Health and other sites, helped patients with advanced cases recover 31% faster than patients who received a placebo. Health officials say remdesivir testing will now move to a second phase, in which it will be compared to another drug, baricitinib, to determine which is the most effective treatment option. Full disclosure, UVA Health sponsors programming on WMRA. State officials are looking for volunteers to help with municipal elections on May 19th and primary elections in June. The Virginia Department of Elections encourages those who do not normally volunteer to help. That includes college and high school students, teachers, and other state employees. Officials say the need is greater now because many retired Virginians who traditionally serve as election officers are at higher risk of complications from COVID-19. Officials say they plan to follow safe practices during the voting, including sanitizing workstations and encouraging hand washing and physical distancing. You can learn more at elections.virginia.gov/officer of elections. Finally, today it is time for the latest installment of our series from Virginia Public Radio, answering listener questions about COVID-19.
This is the COVID-19 Minute, expert answers to your questions. Larry in Blacksburg uses an N95 mask in his wood workshop and now employs it when he runs errands. Those masks are expensive, and he wonders when he should replace it with a new one. At the University of Virginia's intensive care unit for COVID patients, Dr. Tyson Bell suggests making sure the mask seals tightly.
Tension around your nose, and then put your hands above the mask where air could leak out and puff really hard, then do the same for the bottom. You may feel air, and that means you can't get a proper seal, and that means it needs to be replaced.
But he's quick to add that the average person doesn't need an N95 mask to go grocery shopping. A simple cloth mask can be worn, then washed, put in the dryer, and worn again. Another listener wonders if all the disposable masks, testing kits, gloves, gowns, and other medical waste generated by those fighting the virus could contaminate our landfills and oceans. At Virginia Commonwealth University, Dr. Gonzalo Behrman says in this country, that's unlikely.
There's protocols for disposing medical waste, which includes incineration of the waste, so they don't go into dumps.
Of course, patients convalescing at home are likely generating waste contaminated by virus. But Dr. Bell says we need not be worried about that.
I would not be concerned at all about the virus getting into our sewer system or our landfills and multiplying it and subsequently being a risk, because it needs a human body to replicate and pass on.
I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.